Hello and welcome to episode 57 of Woman, Conversations for the Curious. I'm Amy Crawford, founder of the holistic ingredient brand and lifestyle store created exclusively for women. This podcast series is dedicated to women seeking to enrich their lives with every drop of zest. I'm deeply passionate about fostering comfort and confidence as we explore the multifaceted world of womanhood together. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome back Nicole Matheson in what is now our second conversation together. You'll find, and I think thoroughly enjoy, the first conversation by heading to episode 45. To recap, Nicole is a counsellor and couples therapist, helping people come back to themselves and learn practical skills to create more loving, connected, and harmonious intimate relationships. Nicole is particularly passionate about helping women shed body image issues and move beyond the beauty load to feel confident in themselves and worthy of love and connection. During this episode, Nicole highlights the insidious nature of the beauty load across our lives, touching on our missed opportunities along the way. Nicole encourages us to turn the not enoughness around through the power of nature and microcultures. We had a little bit of a sound rough patch during this episode, but you can blame tech and not us. Enjoy. Today's episode is brought to you by my best-selling raw organic maca powder, a blend of red, yellow, and black maca, sustainably sourced from the mountains of Peru. Maca has been used traditionally to naturally balance hormones, boost mood, promote stamina, build libido, and foster greater energy. You can add this delicious multi-flavoured powder to your muesli, porridge, smoothie, bliss balls or hot choc. Available now via my website, theholisticingredient.com. Now, firstly, Nicole, what a treat it is to have you back on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me again.
Oh, look, I always love our chats, Amy, so anytime. Thank you.
What a treat too that we got to meet in real life this year.
I know.
Yeah, so good. Now, in a recent conversation you and I had, you said to me that self-compassion is the antidote to body image angst. And I honestly can't think of a more important conversation for women to have, because even as a 51-year-old woman, I'm still having to check myself regularly on this.
Yeah.
It seems that so few of us are immune, and I wonder if we ever will be. So why then is it so hard for us to be so kind, for us to be kind to ourselves, even when we believe that we should know better?
Oh, well,
where to start?
Where to start? But this is a big question, and I think it's an entire podcast question rather than a 1 minute answer.
Good.
Yes, but I think self-compassion is not what the conditioning naturally leads us towards. What we are naturally led towards with the conditioning of the culture we have been brought up in is the opposite of self-compassion. It's self-criticism, it's self-doubt, it's self-hate, it is disgust, actually. So we are up against it with the conditioning, really, is the short answer.
From childhood.
Okay, so from
birth.
Before we were born, because this is our mothers and our grandmothers and 2,000 to 5,000 years of the patriarchy devaluing women for other things, you know, such as their input into society, creating culture. You know, women couldn't own things. Women weren't sovereign. They couldn't wage in on political discussions or decisions. You know, women had to have pseudonyms to be writers and playwrights or artists or whatever. So it's all tied in with thousands of years that comes through, you know, generational trauma, anxiety. I mean, gosh, this sounds really doomy and gloomy, but I think that all of that comes down in what I call the beauty load, and it gets internalized as self-criticism.
Yeah.
And it's not just the patriarchy. There's other aspects to it, which we'll get into.
So the beauty load.
Yes.
Those listeners who haven't listened to the first podcast episode, I chatted to Nicole about her wonderful book, The Beauty Load, which is available on my website as we speak. What makes up the various aspects of the beauty load?
Okay, so yes, I believe the beauty load is a load that sits on our shoulders constantly throughout our life. Similar to a lot of your listeners will be familiar with the term the mental load or the emotional load. It's like this constant load that we're just kind of, as women in particular, we're just kind of carrying and we can't seem to shake off. Well, I say that there's another load, which is this constant vigilance about our looks, about our appearance, about fitting in terms of looking good enough. And there's so many different aspects of that. There's the work of beauty, there's appropriacy, there's how much I fit into the idealized version of beauty. And there's, you know, in amongst that is racism and fat shaming and thin privilege and abilities and disability shaming or privilege. So there's a lot there. But so the beauty load is something that I say sits on our shoulders and creates constant angst. But actually the beauty load, the influences of the beauty load are external to us, actually. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to how it gets internalized. But aspects of it are the patriarchy, women not being valued for thousands of years, of not having that ownership, but also things like the male gaze, which is a term that was coined in terms of movies, actually. So, you know, the camera treated women really differently to what it treated men, and it was with sexual objectification, like seeing women through the gaze of men as something attractive. It is being shamed for being too sexual and being shamed for being not sexual enough. It is Christian morality around you need to be pious and virginal. It is, you know, it's work culture expectations of makeup and heels, and it is consumerism has a huge role to play in the beauty load, because, you know, in our lifetime, we have since we were born been sold stuff, and the modus operandi of being sold stuff is to tell us that we're not enough the way we are, so we need more to be okay, to be comfortable, to be happy, to feel good about ourselves. So this is actually conditioning us like Pavlov's dog to feel inadequate so that we'll consume, you know. And this is a $52 billion industry to sell to women. So it's a big deal. And then you add to that social media filters, AI, like, yeah, it goes on. The beauty load is a constant in our lives. They say we're getting, the statistics are really hard to find on this, but around 6,000 to 10,000 images of ideal beauty per day, each of us. And, you know, and I think as an adult, I think, yeah, but I don't look at that and think I need to be that. I'm intelligent. Like, I'm a feminist. I don't get affected by that. But it's so constant and so insipid that I'm telling myself a complete lie if I believe that. Like, yeah. Interestingly, when I last year when I was promoting my book or telling my friends about it, a lot of people would say, I don't feel the beauty load. Not a lot. There was a proportion of people then be going, oh yeah, I don't feel that. And I go, wow, lucky you. That's fantastic. Good on you. But actually, once they read the book, they were like, oh yeah.
Now I get it.
Now I get it. I do feel it. I don't think there is a woman out there in a Western culture who doesn't feel it.
It's having read your book, I have to say that it sort of awakened so much awareness in me of just the daily expectation to look a certain way, but also maybe a lot more aware of my own self-criticism. And even though I know I've still got a lot of work to do, just reading the book and becoming more conscious of my thoughts and where all this is stemming from, and that's taken a lot of pressure off myself, because it's so easy just to criticize yourself. God, I'm hopeless. Why can't I get this?
Yeah.
You know, I should know better. I'm middle-aged, and, you know, we have all these conversations.
Exactly, exactly.
But it's sort of given me the other thing I want to mention is it's certainly given me a lot more this beautiful sense of freedom, and this is probably not the right word, but permission.
Yeah, no, like, permission. I
get
it.
You know, as you know, I'm sort of on this grey hair journey that in many respects is failing because I'm not very grey. So I feel very salt and pepper a lot of the time. I look at it and I feel like a bit of a mess. And I look at that, and every time I say that to myself, you look a mess, the next thought now is, to who? To whom? And why does that even matter? It's hair. Why does it even matter? And so I have this growing conviction or ability, sort of, I think it is, to just to let go of those, of all of that expectation. So thank you for that. And as I said, I know I'm a work in progress, but it's really, I feel like I'm getting there.
Yeah. And that's all we can do, really. I mean, I write this book and I have a whole chapter about how that doesn't mean I don't feel it. And firstly, I also want to just respond to what you've just said, is saying the aim of my book is to take that pressure off.
Mm.
Because if you think about it, for all our lives, that beauty load has been internalized into self-criticism, and we've gone, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me, firstly, that my body is not how I want it to be, how I need it to be to feel completely comfortable in this world? And we're so harsh on our particularities about our body when actually we're fine. We're enough. You know, like, we look at another woman with the same stuff and we go, no, you're fine, but for me, not enough. And that is the beauty load right there. That's it. That's the thinking of it. And so taking that pressure and going, that is not personal. That's not mine. I didn't choose this. I've just been conditioned that way. My nervous system activates around it because of that conditioning. And that makes sense. None of us decided we wanted to feel anxious about our bodies, or we wanted to feel enough. This is not a personal buy-in. It's not our fault, but it is our responsibility. And awareness is the first step. So taking that pressure off and going, oh, of course I feel like this, not shaming ourselves for feeling like this, because that's the other thing that happens. And this is where we get to self-compassion, right, is firstly we have the, I feel shit about myself, I feel ugly, I feel a mess, whatever those words are for you, and we all have different ones. And then we have a judgmental part about that feeling. So we've got two parts now present. One is, I feel ugly, awful. And the other is, I shouldn't feel that way. And I feel that the way we've been encouraged to approach this with love your body, body love, body confidence, body acceptance, it's all good. It's all positive. Body positivity is the word I'm probably looking for.
Mm.
It's all positive. It's in the right direction, but it also sets us up for failure, because it's very hard with this nervous system conditioning to love our body when we've been indoctrinated our entire lives to not feel it, to not love it. And that kind of leads us to the chapter in my book about Cuba, which I think is a really important point, which is, and I think we probably talked about it in the last podcast, so I don't want to rabbit on too much about it.
No, but share it again. It's a powerful story. Yeah.
These women in Cuba that I came across on a doco, were interviewed coming out of a gym, and they were all shapes and sizes. And they were asked, are you sexy? Which is, you know, it's the beauty load. It's a part of it. And every single one of them started gyrating and moving their bodies and touching their bodies and saying, hell yeah, I'm sexy. Like, and they were just so sexy. And I was just like, holy shit.
And that body confidence that they had, just it really emanates that sexiness, doesn't it? The way they hold themselves.
It was the ownership of it.
Yeah.
It was the confidence. It was the, yes, I'm sexy. They felt sexy. And I just knew instantly. I don't know if there'd be a gym in Australia unless they'd been studying embodied feminine, you know, dance or something like that, and they'd just come out of that. But there wouldn't be many places in Australia where you could get women in Lycra owning it.
Mm.
And I knew it wouldn't be me. And I was like, whoa, this is cultural. And Cuba, until the point that this doco had been made, had been under communist rule. And so the only brainwashing they'd been getting was propaganda. They had not been getting consumerist ads telling them that they were not enough. And, you know, the studies confirm that over and over. You know, TV was introduced to Fiji in the 70s, and they watched it come in and have an effect on the young women, on their eating habits, on the way that they responded to their own bodies, the way how they felt about their own bodies after 3 years. And I've had it for 50 years. So, you know, it has a huge impact on how we feel about ourselves.
So that story is just so powerful, isn't it? Because it really does bring so much more awareness. And again, helps take that pressure off ourselves. Yeah.
Yes.
It's not our fault.
And I like us to think to ourselves that these thoughts about our bodies and our looks are inevitable. And I know that that might sound depressing, but actually it's liberating, so that you don't have to worry about the fact that you have these thoughts. The fact that that thought arrives, or that part of you that's worried about your looks arrives in your psyche, is inevitable. It is not a worry that you have that thought. It is just a result of being brought up in this culture, and you do not have to follow that thought. You do not have to follow it down a gnarly corridor. You just have to go, ah, yes, of course you're here.
Okay.
You're worried about me fitting in.
But that thought is not who you are. That's the important thing.
It's a worried part of you. And it's worried because it has been enculturated. It's been brought up in this culture. So I want to also just mention what I was saying before, that the beauty load is this thing that's external to us, right? So if we had an umbrella and we held it up, it would be outside of ourselves. But there's some natural human responses that are innate in us that are all about us being social creatures that mean we bring it in. We internalize it, and that is our desire to fit in. It's really important for us to fit in, because if we don't have, you know, and our ancestors growing up in the savannah, if they didn't have the tribe around them and they were isolated from the tribe, they would die. So it's life or death, actually, fitting in. It's wired for life or death. So it does feel really important to fit in. The other one is comparison. This is, again, it's all about fitting in, and we do upward comparison and downward comparison, and we want to know where we are in the pack, in the tribe, and this is completely normal, again, human response. And the other is self-criticism. Self-criticism is a normal, natural human response, and it actually is quite a young response, so it comes in developmental stages as we grow up, especially around sort of 5 or 6 and then teenage years. And the reason this is a natural response is that it's actually safer for us to think that we are the problem when we're little, rather than our caregivers or the culture around us or the community around us is the problem. Because if our caregivers are the problem, what are we going to do about it? We can't run away as a 5-year-old. We have to go, okay, what can I do? How can I be better? How can I avoid this happening again in order to feel safe enough? And so what happens with the beauty load is, even though it's external, because we're humans and we have these natural needs to fit in and to find safety in our tribes, we internalize it.
Right. And so, and this is, as you've mentioned, a very individual experience.
Yes.
But the, so it's the recognition that that's what's happened, but then how, what can we do about that? So this is so interesting for me, because I actually had a psych appointment yesterday to talk about some grief related stuff, and it's a very similar conversation, and she was helping me. We were talking about what to do about that feeling when it comes. So what, and I, it's not making much sense now. So when that thought comes in, let's say, for example, as I said to you a couple of days ago, I've been wearing shorts to exercise in. I usually wear, Lycra active wear, but lately it's more comfortable to wear shorts that aren't, form fitting. That means they're several inches above my knees. And I grew up with a mother who got to a certain point in her life, and I'd watch her getting dressed up, and she just was such a stylish woman. And she would often say, Ames, what do you think? Is this skirt long enough? I think it shows too much of my knees, doesn't it? And I've inherited it, this awareness of the skin sagging around my knees and this cellulite on the inside of my legs that now you can see when I'm wearing these short shorts.
And that's such an important point, the fact that how your mother was with her body is inherited.
Yeah, but I remember as a kid going, Mum, you look beautiful. I couldn't believe it. I didn't understand. She said, I have to get the skirt taken down or something. Yeah. So it is, it's so ingrained, and I'm proud of myself because these are much shorter shorts than I would normally wear, and I'm just digging it, and but most days I will notice my knees and then give myself and just bring awareness to it and then gently remind myself that I'm enough, how would you respond to that, or what do you recommend to people when that self-criticism comes in?
So, yeah, I love the way you're doing it, actually. That sounds great. I think that what I was saying before about how it's inevitable. Yeah. So I think it's the beauty load. It's inevitable. Here's this thought is a good start. It can actually just liberate us a little. The other thing I just want to say here at this point is the motto that we need to have is, when things get hard, we get kind. And I think that's why it's really important to acknowledge the beauty load and our own experience. And like you said, it's very personal. So for me, there were these comments from boys. There was a look of disgust from boys walking past me one day. There was, my whole family fat shaming anyone who they saw on the street, whatever. So that's my own personal experience of it growing up. And I think it's important to sort of look at it and go, that was hard. That is hard. It's still hard. There's all these hard parts about it. And to acknowledge that is really important. And then once we acknowledge things are hard, then we get kind. Because until we've acknowledged that it's hard, we're still just putting one step in front of the other in the kind of, I'm thinking of that hamster wheel of the denial. Way the culture is, of denial, of just trying to get ahead with it. And there is no getting ahead with this, because I hate to say it, but we're aging, and aging is not the ideal beauty. So we're against it. We're always going to be in that hamster wheel, getting more and more Botox or whatever it is till the day we die, which if that's your choice, that's fine. There's no judgment. Actually, there is no judgment. Like, the point of my book is not to say, don't do your makeup and don't spend money on clothes and don't do any plastic surgery. It's not that at all. It is, let's have an internal world that is kind and compassionate.
Yeah.
Whatever we're doing on the surface, do whatever you need to do to feel good. But let's have an internal world that is kind and compassionate. So, I think those feelings come up. So there's a lot I have to say about this, but let's focus on the IFS version of this. So internal family systems, which is a therapeutic model that believes that there are internal parts that get activated and want to take over and maybe have their own voice and have their own thoughts and say things to you to try and keep you safe, to protect you. And we also have an internal, I call it a central stem of self. So there's this part of you that is the one who can observe the parts and the one who knows that you are actually worthy of love, the one who is able to find compassion and to be curious. And so we have a scared part come up, and this scared part is saying whatever it says about your body. Oh, the gray is messy, the cellulite's yucky, whatever it is. So firstly, instead of going, oh, shit, yeah, you're right, and agreeing with it and going down the pathway that that leads us to, which is often, you know, feeling awful about ourselves, but also then doing the thing to cover it up or make it better, or, you know, thinking I need to go on a crash diet, or I need to buy new clothes, or I need to go get Botox or whatever it is, right? So instead of following that or hiding ourselves and not going out, not dating, you know, the effects of the beauty load are often quite shaming. And so they often mean hiding, which is the saddest thing as far as I'm concerned. So we feel that inevitable, upset, scared part of ourselves, and we turn towards it instead of following it. And we go, hey, I see you. I see that you're scared. And I get it. It makes sense. I mean, it does make sense. If you think about the beauty load and all of the consumerist and patriarchal and social media and personal family messages that we've received for so many years, it makes sense. So if we turn to this part and go, hey, I get it. I get that you're worried. And I get that you're actually worried for me because you care about me. Yeah. Otherwise, this part would not be there. If it didn't care about you and want to keep you safe because you are worthy of caring about, it would not be there. And so if we can get to that, we diffuse a lot of that angst. But what we also need to watch is the other part that comes in, which is the judgment. It's like, you shouldn't hate your body. You shouldn't worry about being old. You're a feminist. You're a 50-year-old woman. You should be over this by now. You know, you're privileged, whatever it is. So that can be a real block in us being compassionate to our parts. It's also a worried part that is wanting the best for you and not wanting you to be, you know, selfish, not wanting you to be worried about this, not wanting you to be anxious. So we have to do the same kind of process with that. So that's one approach, an IFS approach. But I think that, in short, allowing ourselves to feel is really important. Oh, that feels uncomfortable. That feels really disappointing. That feels sad. You know, it feels anxious. And just giving those upset parts a big hug. Because we understand it. It makes sense.
And it's okay.
It's okay. It's awful normal, but it's the normal of this culture. Then we have to create our own culture, you know, a culture of the people we surround ourselves with.
Yeah.
And we can do that on social media. That's the beautiful. There's the ugly, ugly side of social media, which is like, oh my God, everyone is gorgeous and has more money and has more amazing hairstyles or whatever. But there's also people like you out there that value the similar things and have amazing positive messages. So we need to find our people We need to create the culture for ourselves in our internal world and for our kids and our families and our friends, and then I also want to talk about, sorry, I'll finish my thought, a culture where we are appreciating the hearts and souls and true selves of each other, where we're encouraging people for all kinds of things, not just looks.
Yeah.
Where we're experiencing and feeling life. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I get a bit too excited. Sorry, Amy.
Not at all. This is wonderful. I'm so enjoying just listening to you. It's most helpful, Nicole, honestly. Yeah. And it's so interesting hearing you talk about IFS. On the back of my conversation with a psychologist yesterday. And I think something that she said to me, we could perhaps just talk about this for a moment, is, for instance, we're talking about the heaviness of the grief that I'm experiencing through the loss of my dad. And she said, let's remember, you have this sadness. What were her words? She said, you are not sad. There is sadness. It's acknowledging that there is, I am not the sadness. There is sadness.
Yes.
And then she had said, hold your hand on your heart and around your tummy, your body doesn't know the difference, whether it are your arms or somebody else's. Hold yourself gently and say, it's okay. There is sadness and acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And am I right in saying that suggestion that there is anxiety, there is sadness, there is anger, there is criticism, is to help alleviate the overwhelm that comes when we feel, when we take on all of this strong emotion?
Exactly. Right. So thinking of it as a part of me is upset is just like what your psychologist was saying. It's not me. I am not one big
lump of
formation
sadness.
Of anxiety or sadness or whatever it is. When I can think of it as there's a part of me that's upset, I've just, there's a bit of distance between me and the anxiety, and that is helpful. This is like psychology, one of the most helpful fundamental thoughts of psychology, I believe, and psychology 101 really is like, name the thought, name the feeling. And then I am not it. It's a part of me that is anxious, worried. And then I become the one. So instead of this anxiety being me and running the show, driving the bus, taking me wherever it'll take me, I become the one who looks after the anxiety. I, the observer, can be the one who goes, hey, I see you. I see that you're anxious, like you would a kid. And that is such an important shift when we're dealing with these inner anxious parts. When we become the one looking after it, the anxiety can relax a bit. The internal stuff all shifts, the internal dynamics, the energetics, it all shifts. And we give that anxiety a beautiful big hug. And it's really helpful, just like your psychologist was saying, to place hands on ourselves, to breathe, to take the breath to it, to find it in the body. When we can bring it into the body and have a somatic experience and feeling of it, something really shifts there as well.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds a bit like, I don't know how to, we're kind of talking to parts of ourselves. So it kind of might feel a bit strange for people. But actually, I think if you give it a try, you might be surprised how these parts have a lot to say. They know what they're thinking and feeling. They know what they need. And I often get people to ask, what does this part need to feel less extreme, less anxious, less sad, less worried, whatever it is?
I've just had a thought that I wanted to ask you about, actually, when we're speaking about being self-compassionate and kind to ourselves. Equally, and I recall this from the conversation, from the words in your book, it's as important that we are as compassionate and kind to others. And something that I recall from your book was a comment you made. For instance, if I was to say to you, Nicole, I just feel so crap in my skin today. My knees are wobbly. My hair looks a mess. And for you then, you know, someone's response, I'm sure this wouldn't be yours, but could be, oh, you look gorgeous. Don't worry about it. You look wonderful. Well, this is exactly what we shouldn't be doing, isn't it? And so it's acknowledging another person's discomfort. Is that right?
That's right. So ideally, just feels a bit dismissing when we go, no, you're gorgeous, you're beautiful, what are you talking about? It doesn't feel good. And it is our knee-jerk response. And you're very generous to say I don't do that, but, you know, still my knee-jerk, even though I know it's not what how I want to respond. But actually what it feels like is if you said to me, no, Nicole, you're gorgeous, it actually feels like you're dismissing my angst, you're dismissing my worries, and you're telling me I'm a bit silly for not seeing
how beautiful you are.
Yeah, that's right. Or I'm missing it, or, you know, which it also feels nice. Like it's complex, but I actually think it feels better to say, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. I know I have days like that too. It can be really hard, can't it? Because it's actually a part of me that's really worried, really feels it. I'm not making this up. I'm not fishing for compliments, although, you know, sometimes that might be happening. But generally speaking, this angst, it's real. It's a thing. And I think the most compassionate thing actually is to touch, to acknowledge. And acknowledgement means touching the pain of it, being in it with someone. And letting them know you get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I say the same for our kids as well. I think it's really easy for parents to go, you don't need to worry about this, or you don't need those clothes, or you don't need to wear makeup. Don't be silly, you know. But actually, we could also say, I get it. I remember feeling like that when I was young, you know, and just a totally different relationship ensues when we can acknowledge it ourselves.
And can we also come back to the body positivity movement?
Yeah, sure.
I'd love to hear some thoughts from you around this. I'm sure that the body positivity movement has made some amazing inroads in terms of, you know, us even having these sorts of discussions. But do you think too that it is harmful in some respects?
I think it possibly can be, and especially I'm very visual, so I'm using my hands, and I have a diagram in my head. So apologies to
everyone. You can't see the diagram in your head. None of us can.
The diagram in my head.
Describe the diagram.
Okay, so in the diagram, there is a thought, which is, I feel shit about myself. I feel fat, whatever it is. And then when we have been, you know, exposed to body positivity and self-love, and just love your body, accept your body, there's another thought that follows, I feel awful and ugly and fat or whatever it is, which is, oh, God, I shouldn't feel this way. And so this is the danger of body positivity, is it's actually the judgment on ourselves for not being able to be positive. But actually, it's really hard to be positive because we are, like Pavlov's dog, conditioned to not feel great about our bodies and ourselves.
Mm.
And so I feel like it's a bit of a setup to make us feel like failures.
Mm.
And then I can just imagine throwing our hands up in the air and just going, oh, I give up. This is all too hard. I'm not suggesting that happens to everyone, but I definitely see that in my clinic. And I think I have experienced that actually many times. So I, when I say I think, I know I've felt that myself. So I just think self-compassion is an approach that feels more comfortable for me to suggest, because firstly, we can be compassionate to the part that feels fat, that feels ugly, whatever it is, because that makes sense. Yes, totally get that. Of course you do, after all of those messages you've got about being this particular type and look and whatever it is. But also I can be compassionate to the part that judges it and says, I shouldn't feel that way. Of course it says that, because it's also been exposed to all of that. It wants to be a mature adult. It wants to have a healthy relationship with my body. It doesn't like this feeling of angst. So I need to be compassionate to every internal part of me. All parts are welcome. All parts are actually trying to help me and wanting to protect me and coming from a place of care and love. They all love me. They actually want the best for me, but they all have slightly different agendas, these parts. And so self-compassion means loving whatever that part is that shows up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's sort of coming up for me is also this sense of letting go of the expectation we may have that there is going to be another side to this, meaning I'm going to get to the end of this struggle. Because I think that's actually, I found that quite reassuring listening to you.
Yeah.
You know, quit expecting there's going to be a day where all of a sudden all of your wobbles are okay, entirely okay.
I mean, I think you probably have moments in your life where you're like, yeah, I'm super fit, got great clothes right now, I'm looking hot, we're all good. But it's so, what's the word?
Not tangent. What's
yeah, tangible, fleeting. Intangible. Fleeting. It's so fleeting. It's so fleeting. And it's like, oh, I've got all my ducks lined up in the row. But then you have to cling to those ducks and you're like, ducks, oh my god, the angst about keeping the ducks in the row, the angst about keeping that perfect body, it means no cake for you, it means showing up to the gym every day. It's like, oh
yeah,
you know, is that sustainable for the rest of my life? Probably not. And so, and then, like I said before, we age. We're aging, and that is not the ideal. Like, we have to grapple with this. We have to grapple with it, and the grappling with it compassionately is all we can do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have to be kind to ourselves. We have to be acknowledge that, you know, the world has set us up to feel like this about our bodies, and that's really awful and sad, and that's worth grieving about. It's not some beautiful, accepting, ideal world, but I actually think as we age as well, something shifts, you know, it does get easier.
It does.
Like, it's both, the beauty is both going. It's like, see you later, hot body.
Like, it's so interesting. Like, I think at the timing of this recording, the previous day I shared a reel about full brief undies.
I did very much appreciate that.
Over my jeans. Yeah. And it was so interesting.
And featured in it.
And you featured. I wasn't going to say it, but yes, you did. But what was interesting, because even that experience for me, there was the odd comment from people in the community going, there's no way I'd do that. And, you know, each to their own. And as I did it, I just was thinking to myself, I couldn't give a flying damn that my underpants are over my jeans. And what a bloody liberating feeling that is,
so
because
liberating.
A decade ago, I would not have been there.
Yes.
You know, they would have been hipsters or G-strings, and no fear would anyone see undies over my pants. I couldn't give a damn.
It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? That liberation.
And that does it's come so with age. Yeah. Now, Nicole,
so I just want, this is more yeah, sorry, than do you say. Have to,
yes, keep going.
There's something more I want to say, which is just this concept that I do talk about in the book as well, which is, I feel like what develops with the beauty load and with all the conditioning is that we develop this external eye that looks back on ourselves and sees our bodies through judgment. It's as though we're objectifying ourselves. I don't know if this feels relatable, but it's like we're looking at ourselves externally and we're going, look at that problem, look at that flaw, as though it's every cool girl that ever teased us, every bully, every mother or family member comment, every, you know, fashionista or authoritarian figure is judging us. And that is not a nice way to look at ourselves. So we need to switch from the judgmental external eye. So if that means getting rid of your mirror for a few days, like, do it. Because when you're camping, there's no mirrors. You feel fantastic, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to switch to the internal eye. And that is, how do I feel? How do I feel in my body? How is it to be alive in my body right now? Not from the external. We're so used to seeing it, to evaluating ourselves from the external, but we need to come inside.
That's really quite a shift, isn't it? Because you know that feeling you have when you put a favorite dress on or a favorite something on and you feel them, think, oh, I love how I feel in this dress. And then that can shift though as soon as you look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Oh, I put on a bit of weight. Oh, I've got a bit tight around my eyes. Oh, look, you know, and then all the criticism starts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a fine line. I think it's also beautiful when you do feel great in an outfit and some makeup. You know, that's also beautiful.
It is.
But I think we need to come, the pendulum has swung so far to the external judgment that we do need to bring it back and just remember how it feels. And I feel like things like yoga are so good for this, or, you know, just experiencing your body, being in nature, going for a swim in natural water, whatever it is that bring. Everyone will have, I'm mentioning my own things, but everyone will have their own thing that helps them to bring back the experience of being alive, the feeling of being you.
Yeah.
On this precious day with the sunlight on your skin and the birds singing or whatever it is. Like, that's what life is about. Mm. And when we can be kind to ourselves about all of that stuff, we can just start being.
Yeah.
Just being.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Nicole, thank you. We're going to have to wind up in a minute, but before we do, I wanted to ask you to share a little bit about your course.
Mm.
Because for the listeners who would like some more support around this, you have a course too. It could probably
I have a course. My course is called From Insecurity to Body Confidence. And sorry, you might have to just pause this for a second because I've forgotten what the tagline is. Yeah. So, yes, my course is called From Insecurity to Body Confidence, a self-compassionate approach to overcoming the angst of the beauty load. So it's pretty much what I realized when I wrote the book is it really honed me in on the idea that the antidote, look, just what you were saying at the beginning, the antidote to all of this angst and beauty load, body image stuff is self-compassion. So what I did is I just took that one idea and I turned it into an online course for women. And it is, I've tried to keep it really succinct, and all the videos are, it's just a series of six videos and they're all about 10, 15 minutes. So it's trying not to take up too much of your time. And it's basically teaching you, you know, what we talked about today, but the details of it and how to, the how-to of self-compassion. I bring in the work of some really top thinkers in the field of self-compassion, Brené Brown, Gabor Mate, and Kirsten Neff, and Dick Schwartz with IFS. And I just bring that one idea up, and it is about body confidence. So it's about the beauty load. It's about our bodies. I do also just want to say that this concept of self-compassion, it applies across the board to everything, you know, so our perfectionism and our, you know, all of that, these are upset parts that are just actually being protective. And when we turn to them, like your sadness, when we turn to it and we go, hey, I get it. This was really sad. Yeah. And we're the one that looks after it. Things shift. So, yes, this is a course that has just brought that idea and put it into a nice little package for people to really, really practice self-compassion.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And we'll provide access to that on the web article on my website.
Beautiful. And I'm giving your followers a discount as well.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much for that, Nicole. I'll pop that in the show notes as well. Again, thank you for your wisdom and the comfort and the freedom you have brought today. So, yeah, appreciate you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Amy, for all your love and care and for what you do. Really appreciate you. Thank you.
This was episode 57 of Woman, Conversations for the Curious. You'll find Nicole over on Instagram at nicole.matheson and all further links to her book, her courses and her work on today's show notes over at theholisticingredient.com/57. As always, if you're enjoying this series and you've 2 minutes to leave a review on your favourite podcast app, I'd truly appreciate it. Until next time, stay curious.